From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by...
It's Sunday morning, so good morning and welcome to Loose on the Lead. Seth Merrow and Steve Bick live from Saratoga, our Clear Court location. And as you can see behind me, a beautiful Sunday ahead after a really nice Saturday, 38,000 plus. And we'll talk about much of what went on with some of the participants as well, all coming up. But one of the participants here on Loose on the Lead every week, Steve Bick. And I see you're wearing the DT colors this morning.
We'll talk about that in a second. But yes, I am.
I noticed it right when you walked up.
I appreciate it. I see you're wearing a Sacco Ties tie. That tie, let me tell you, that tie's got low mileage. I don't think I wore that tie over the years.
Well, is that a good sign, though?
It is. No, because this way the knot holds up nicer.
But it means you weren't enamored with it.
It's a tough tie to coordinate, not for you. Because it doesn't matter to you, because whatever you're wearing, it's not germane. You have a gray button-down shirt that would be a natural for that tie.
Okay, all right. Yeah, you're right, though. I do not. There is no coordination.
Right?
It's going on.
I'm like a cane for you know, he's out there. Wandering around, folks, when it comes to the fashion.
Oh, you know, I almost wore the Sally Ellen tie. I should have worn the
Have you worn that? Have you sent her a picture of the tie, of the Sally Ellen?
You're talking the very nice one. That one I've worn already.
So now you're saying the ties I give you are not nice?
She had... No, these are. I'm saying she sent me another... set of ties that I have to wear on, so I'll have to.
Oh, that's right. You told me you got that collection.
I'll have to fire one up.
Unbelievable.
On your behalf, I should have done that. Should have done that this morning. But before we start out, play of the day. Since you're in here live, we didn't do it earlier. So
it's more like plop of the day. I cannot find a winner on this play of the day, and the worst part is. I'm doing 20 out of the 40 days. So then the other days that I'm doing my bold type plays, I'm 2 for 3 on that front. And even on Thursday, I loved the Mott horse in the turf sprint and bold typed it. But it was 4 to 1. I thought, let's go for a bigger price. So we're struggling on, because my tendency, a play of the day is not necessarily the most likely winner on the card.
Nobody
you don't need
that.
Me. Yeah, you don't need me for the 1 to 2 or the 4 to 5. I want the kinds of plays that I utilize myself, which are middle price long shots, 6 to 1, 8 to 1. That's the kind of horse I key off of. I'll tell you what, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I would have made the play of the day in that first race, as it happens. There was the very obvious horses that, you know, like I'm Very Busy from Chad, who ends up winning. But Bay Long, this was the Mott second timer, had workout notes, was going to be a square, and sure enough, goes off at 11 to 1, ran a bang-up race, and settled for second. That, to me, is the kind of horse you want to grab onto and key around. Whether you, when I say key, a win bet, and then underneath in second with the other prime players, and then a reverse tri-key. If the horse finishes third, you go 5 by 4 by 1, for instance. That's a $10.50 tri-key. So, you know, picking those kinds of horses. So, with that in mind, here's what we're looking at today. Seventh race, right? Yeah, seventh race. You got a bit of a challenge here. And what the challenge is, here's Mott again, and Mott's going to be a big theme of the morning. Lee Einsiedler is going to join us after the first break to talk about his just fabulous win yesterday with Casa Creed, who is becoming more versatile, more amazing, turf sprinter that now has a grade one win at a mile. Really, really fun. Mott's having a great meet. All his horses are running. He brings back Spongy, the three, off of an extensive layoff. And if the horse is ready to run, okay, Spongy probably wins. Donk has got Out of Sight, who's quite all right. Rob Attriss has got My Lips Are Sealed. However, I'm interested in the four in here, Palace Gossip at 8-1 from Tony Dutrow. And I think this actually, if I'm not mistaken, this is the second time I've gone to Palace Gossip. So I'm kind of going back to the well on this horse, who's coming out of a turf sprint and is going to stretch out to a mile and a 16th. First time around two turns, and I think it's going to suit. You get Flavian Pratt, who's now ridden this horse twice, once downstate for a win in an allowance at first level, and now subsequently in these two second level allowances at the Spa. So 8-1, it's the right price. Spongy is the horse to beat. But let's make Palace Gossip the 8-1 play of the day for DePaula Chevrolet.
I like it. All right, there's your play of the day. Let's go back and go ahead.
Quick note, you mentioned the time. We are. I'm going to start to get like over the top excited because this filly, this Irish War Cry filly, Countess Constance, she is just hitting every mark, and Gary feels like she's going to start.
Here?
Yeah, she'll start. There's two options. There's a turf sprint, I think on the 1st, on Thursday the 1st. And then closing day, there's 6 furlongs on the main track. I think she could do either. And so Countess Constance, she has done so well up here. It's just tremendous. Our friends Donnie and Lori Tessitore, they're going to come in. They're coming this week to see her. They came in. Our friends Dave Blaha and got a couple of other new potential people coming in. Got Brad and Bree and very excited. I did not expect when we bought this filly at OBS June that she'd be able to run up here. But she just boom, 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 everything. And she's, particularly the gate work, I were a little surprised that she's been so sharp out of the gate. So, kind of exciting.
We are looking for the DT runner.
We're running at first starter at Presque Isle next week. Kid Chocolate. Shipped up here, then had to ship to Finger Lakes, and now goes Finger Lakes to Presque Isle. Getting to Presque Isle, you wouldn't think it would be that difficult. It's like a nightmare. It's impossible. I mean, when I go to Louisville, you pass right through Erie, and the track is right there. If you're a horse, though, very tough trip.
Who knew? Who knew?
The rest of the story.
So he's next week?
He's the 22nd, a week from Wednesday.
All right. So we'll look for him out at Presque Isle Downs on the synthetic.
The PID.
All right. Let's go take a look at some of the action from yesterday. Again, we'll show the four-star day when Lee comes up, obviously, but let's go back and look at the Saratoga Special, which was kind of a fun story.
What a great
as you say
story.
First Saratoga start and gets a graded victory. Michelle Lovell at Saratoga with Damon's Mound, who came into the race off a really nice victory in the debut effort. Churchill Gulfport, obviously, yesterday was the big favorite. Gulfport winds up running second at 45 cents to the dollar. And at 9-5, Damon's Mound gets it done. Gabriel Saez comes in for the mount. So a good story for him, too, coming up. And you can see, nice stretch run here from Damon's Mound, getting it done in the Saratoga Special, as mentioned, from Michelle Lovell. So nice victory, popular with the Michelle Lovell fans.
Well, Michelle Lovell fans includes me. And I've gotten to know Michelle very well over the last 10 years or so. I think plenty of people in the Northeast know her from her days in Florida, starting out as a rider, then made the transition to horseman and trainer. Well, Michelle Lovell has been winning at a high level now with a limited number of top type horses. She's got the two sprinters, Just Might and the other one. What's the other one?
Just Might's the one that Turf and Dirt.
Yeah, Turf and Dirt.
Really.
How am I forgetting the other one that she owns and that she bred? But, she won the Intercontinental? The Intercontinental, I think, downstate. She does a tremendous job and it should be getting more opportunities. to be honest. And it's a little weird. Clocker John Nichols in Kentucky, of course, introduced us originally. And I cannot recommend her highly enough. Her base is obviously Kentucky. Then she goes down to Fairgrounds for the winter, and now she's been going to Colonial the last couple of summers. And if there's owners out there and you want personalized attention.
Yeah, change of control.
Change of control, thank you. Intercontinental, was I right about the Intercontinental?
Right. You were right.
Give Michelle Lovell, reach out to me. I'll send you her number. She deserves a chance with big outfits and with some top-level horses because she's doing it with, you know, meat and potato stock. And
just Mike, as I say, it was really fun this winter down at Fairgrounds. Turfy.
Well, it's been a couple of years. It's more than that. I mean, won the Colonel Power, and that was the first, I think, sort of message that she was going to be a serious horse. Yesterday, in general, I thought Seth was a feel good Saturday. There was nothing but good stories yesterday. Michelle Lovell comes to town and wins. How about Robbie Davis and Jackie Davis and the East Avenue Racing Team, a local partnership? That was delirious. Jackie Davis's first win, which I was shocked. That's her first win at Saratoga. I was shocked by that.
I had Dylan on yesterday, and I mentioned, boy, your sister has the thruway going here, Naira and Finger Lakes, and she's having a good meet out the Finger Lakes too.
Of the riding Davises, Jackie had the better day. Dylan got dumped in a post parade. That horse jigged and jogged and and dropped Dylan. That was in the baby race, Scoot Scoot, Ray Handel's baby. But Jackie, they came back to the cheers, too, which was nice.
I mean, it wasn't just the group in the winner's circle. Yeah. It was the people outside.
Everybody, people recognized that the Davis family, Robbie, of course, and his
Robbie
great career.
Robbie was over the moon.
It was wonderful. So Michelle Lovell, then Jackie, then how about Bobby Roboto and Mark Keller? First of two starters on the day for them. Mark Keller, just a wonderful owner, been on the scene for years with Roboto, incredibly loyal. And, you know, Bobby's only got eight horses, and everything he's sending out is running. I think he's got all placements, first, seconds, and thirds.
Nothing wrong with that.
And who else? Then Lee. Then Lee was the other. It was all feel good. Yeah. Everybody left here happy.
Yeah, it was fun. 38,000 in the joint and announced attendance, so another good Saturday up here. Also yesterday, Arlington Million down at Churchill. We'll watch the stretch run there. It will be Santon, the number six horse, getting it done down at Churchill for Brendan Walsh and Godolphin. Tyler Gaffleone on board. Won the Turf Classic down at Churchill. Two starts back in the Manhattan in the previous start. Finished sixth behind Probuven, but followed that up with a victory Saturday. Smooth Like Straight winds up second. Sacred Life runs third. Santon getting it done in the Arlington Million yesterday at Churchill.
This is some nice horse, and both of these races were essentially won the same way. You know, this turf course is a problem, obviously. Yeah. And both horses that won, Dalika upsets the Beverly D, I think is the longest shot on the board.
You're right. 751-1.
Yeah, Dalika upsets the Beverly D, and then Santon here, and how I was very surprised that he was third choice. How do you? And you know what's funny about that? Everybody on the radio show Friday, everybody picked Santon. All of us, Marcus Hirsch, Scully, me. Every time it came up, Nick Tamaro, we all picked Santon, and somehow not that our opinion is supposed to sway the nation, but somehow he goes off at a clean 5-2, 690. So this is a big win for him, and you know, when Lee joins us, I think he's going to discuss the potential that if Casa Creed were to win out, he probably goes in the Shadwell or whatever the name is these days of the Fall Mile at Keeneland, and then the Breeders' Cup. Well, suddenly he's got four Grade One wins.
Yeah,
he's in the conversation for Turf Champion, and here's Santon, who is now you know, got two signature grade one wins.
Yeah. The Turf Classic.
This was a horse, you know, the funny thing about Santon is this is a horse we all were on when he first came on the scene, and it took him a couple of starts to get going over the winter, and we got beat a few times. Now he's on a roll, and you can't go a weekend without Godolphin winning a big race somewhere in the world. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
So that was yesterday. Today, Ellis Park Derby. They've got a little bit of a...
Oh, they got a huge card. Yeah. If you have not looked at Ellis, and for those that played the $1 Bluegrass Pick 6, Dalica was obviously the horse you were gonna need. How about, by the way, we didn't even mention it. You were focused on the grade ones, which I understand. Bell's the One upset Sconson.
Oh, that was, yeah.
Which was tremendous.
Those two are amazing.
Unbelievable.
Down there.
Unbelievable.
Two, yeah, that's a couple of really nice.
And as we say, not that Greg Foley winning isn't great for everybody, but when Neil Pessin wins, everybody wins. Well, because I always have got one trainer you say that about. For years, it was Scooter Dickey. If Scooter Dickey won, we all won.
Very good. We'll head to a break, but before we do that, do want to remind people, I mentioned it earlier, Low Rollers contest today over there. Always a lot of fun, Thursdays and Sundays. Stop by, try out the Low Rollers New York Bread sale across the street tonight. Jockey Club Roundtable's going on. What other
people? Oh, how exciting.
Confabs.
Boom.
And I guess that's it as far as the agenda. So we'll head to a break. And when we come back, Lee Einsiedler.
Lee Einsiedler. Later, Joe Bianca of TDN, Thoroughbred Daily News, my boy, OE. And then to close out, and we tried to do something, actually. I wanted to try to put together a new media special where Chuck Simon and Barry Spears, Barry's been up, and of course they've got the Going in Circles podcast and the writing. Chuck has been doing a summer-long Steve Criss style spa diary, which has been so much fun. But Barry had to fly back. The only flight he could get back to Daytona area was this morning. So unfortunately, Barry went back. But I wanted to get Barry and Chuck, then Joe, who's doing, of course, Better Things for TDN, as well as the Writers Room show. And then we're going to hear from Rasai Harper, who, if you have not seen it on Facebook and Twitter, are doing the Real Players of the Backstretch videos. It is so wonderful and so fresh and just, you know, vital to the message that we're trying to get out about the game. And it's not a forced, canned nonsense, you know, ad campaign. It's real people. Rasai, and he says he's found his calling. We're going to talk to Rasai Harper as well this morning. Loose on the Lead continues on another glorious morning here at Saratoga. Every day is nicer than the previous. Back after this.
DePaula. Save this week. Drive Silverado just $369 a month. Yes, $369 a month.
And come join the family for value. Just visit, call, or click. So come join the family and think DePaula for all your automotive needs. When you think trucks, think DePaula.
Save this week and drive any new Chevy like Equinox with zero down payment, zero first payment, and zero security.
Then come join the family for value. Just visit, call, or click. So come join the family and think DePaula for all your automotive needs.
Bridgestone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
It only takes one upset to make history, and now you can be part of Saratoga's long tradition at the Dark Horse Mercantile. The Dark Horse Mercantile offers a carefully curated selection of clothing, gifts, and home decor, from one-of-a-kind vintage racing memorabilia to select brands like Barber and Under Armour, as well as exclusive Dark Horse branded merchandise. So celebrate the Dark Horse in all of us at the Dark Horse Mercantile, downtown Saratoga, where the smart bet is always the Dark Horse.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead. And as promised before the break, we are happy to be joined now by our friend Lee Einsiedler. Always root for Lee and Casa Creed. Boy, what a horse. And showed it again yesterday. One start back, won the grade one. Draper, and yesterday, the grade one four-star Dave. Lee, good morning. Congratulations.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you. And as you sat down, you said, epic night last night, understandably.
We drank all the Casamigos in all the bars and restaurants in downtown Saratoga. If you can't find it for a couple days, I know where it is.
You were popping open the autograph piles, were you?
No. Those were a nice donation to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. We do that every year.
Yeah, that was a great event.
I always love helping those guys. They're great people, and they need all the help they can get.
Yeah, that was great.
This is a win that really is yet another layer on a horse that had already done enough, quote unquote. Yeah. And yet here you are as a six-year-old, and you know, he's a Jimmy Creed, so anything you can continue to do to enhance his resume and make him that much more attractive to, you know, prospective stallion offers. But what's amazing to me, Lee, is that he's finding other dimensions.
Right.
As a six-year-old, you know, the horses mature at five, and it's not, I mean, they might get to a plateau and maintain it. He has gotten better again this year.
You know, he's just unbelievable. And the thing is, the last couple of years, we've learned so much more about him. I want to give Joe Bravo a lot of credit. He showed us in the Elusive Quality a couple of years ago.
If you wait,
he's got a tremendous burst. And then Junior won the Jiper with him that year and also came from last. So we thought if we just wait more and more patient, he has a tremendous kick.
Did Joe come up and say that?
Yeah, he said, Lee, if we just wait on this horse, he's going to be very tough to beat in the future. We just need to be patient with him.
Well, and I think there's also, when you bring up the Elusive Quality, which was 7/8, there's also the pace scenarios, and up until that time, I think he had pretty much been around a mile.
Yes. Yeah.
And so sharpening his speed in those sprints, then, you know, basically, you know, placing him and you know, basically having that knowledge about him, and then also basically teaching him to, you know, to come with that sharp one run. Suddenly you've got that much more of a versatile horse, and now he's moving seemingly interchangeably.
You know, he went up here when he won the Hall of Fame as a three-year-old at a mile.
Forgot about that.
So in the back of my mind, I always felt a mile was great. What we didn't know early on then was just the way to ride him was to be more patient,
Don't rush him.
And we learned that through the Elusive Quality and the Jiper. And, you know, you and I talked about the race a couple of days ago.
Absolutely.
And I think I'm a decent handicapper.
Absolutely.
When I looked at the race, I thought, and listen, Bill Mott would never tell the jock what to do. But the jock came to the same conclusion that we did. Be patient, wait, and go. And Kieran McLaughlin told me last night when he spoke to Louis about the race on Friday, he said, I'm just going to wait and follow the filly.
Yeah.
And we'll get it. And he was right.
Yeah, why don't we take a look at the race, and we'll pull up the entire race. You can kind of take us through it. And I was in the paddock before the race, and as Louis got up on the saddle, you were walking alongside the horse. You said, see you in the winner's circles.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the confidence. So kind of take us through watching the race. As he's sitting back early, and what was your concern earlier, or was that the game plan?
No concern at all. And I'll tell you what, Seth, I had my binoculars on him on the backside. And Louis was sitting so chilly, and when a rider is sitting there, not moving his hands, not asking the horse for anything, I knew he was loaded up. You know, you get worried if on the backside they're being aggressive on him. He was just sitting like a statue on him. And I thought, gosh, when Regal Glory makes her move, he'll make his move, and the best horse will win. And yesterday the best horse was Casa Creed.
Yeah, easy to follow you in the pink silks there, but back of the pack, the number one horse, Regal Glory, the number three horse. So as you say, he's going to follow her. Regal Glory, you know, as talented as you can get. And so to get the victory over a multiple grade one winner like that really does add to his resume, and this just had to be thrilling as they come to this the final turn.
Yeah,
you can see what's developing.
You sure can, and I thought John Embry all called it great when he said that, you know, here comes Regal Glory and then here comes Casa Creed. He nailed it. And that comes up right about maybe 5 seconds from now. I thought it was a great race call. He called it right about here. She went, and just as we thought he would go, and right about now.
That was interesting. That was interesting what Louis just did.
Yeah.
He paused.
He did. He waited.
He waited for her to make her move.
He waited.
Instead of going by at that point.
Steve, he likes a target, and Louis knows that.
Wow.
The same way he waited in the Jiper.
Wow.
He waited. He didn't want to go too early. And he really felt, he told me after the race,
wow,
that if he was just patient, he could get him. He could win going to the wire.
I had not noticed that when he drew abreast, he then paused and matched a stride before asking again.
Yeah, that was a great ride.
Wow.
Yep. He's a great rider. Not that Junior hasn't rode him great. Louis rode him fabulous. He rode him fabulous in Saudi Arabia. We missed by two nostrils.
It's true.
The race in Dubai was a crazy race. 16 horses came over on top of us. It was a winning race. And he had a plan, and his plan was just what we were thinking, but he never told us and we didn't tell him. So that's great.
Have we seen a number yet? A buyer?
Yes. 103.
103 buyer. Dave Grennan sent it over to me this morning, as did Steve. And
86, by the way, for Damon's Mound in the
2-year-old race. Nice goal. Very nice goal. And there was no pace yesterday. 24-40.
Very even.
It was fine.
It was even.
And he closed into it anyway.
Yeah,
that was great. Talk about the decision to go over Saudi Arabia, the frustrating near miss, and then, as you say, the fifth place finish in the big field in Dubai. But talk about the decision to take him over.
He was just doing great. We had to run him, and there's no place to run him here. And Billy was going to send Art Collector over. He said, let's send them both. So we talked about it, and I said, you know, if you're going to have Louis Saez ride Art Collector, to send two riders all the way to halfway around the world didn't make sense. Let's let Louis ride him. And he ran amazing in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. He was bottled up. It was a big field. And when Louis got him out, you know, the wire got there before he did, but on the wire and after the wire, he was two jumps in front of the winner. And that race told me, you know, this horse, not that we didn't think before, but that was an amazing, amazing race for him. And then it made sense just to keep him there and run in Dubai. He was doing great.
Yeah, you were there.
And I think he ran fifth, but it was a strangely run race. Yeah. All the horses came over on him, and he never really got to run. And when we brought him back, I said to Bill, do you think he'll be ready for Saratoga? I mean, you see these horses run over there, and they take 6 months or a year off. He said, Saratoga, I'm going to win the Jiper with him again this year. I'm not waiting for Saratoga, and that's what he did.
Talk a little bit about, you know, because you've been in the game for a while now and owning horses, and it's always fun to see you in the winner's circle. He's
Thank you.
A guy like you who just loves the game.
And, and
talk about what it's like to have a horse like this.
I've been so fortunate. We've had some nice horses.
Mr. Sidney.
Mr. Sidney was nice.
Timber Reserve
won the Pennsylvania Derby.
High Oak.
High Oak is, listen, he got hurt in the Fountain of Youth. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with as a four-year-old. He's going to be special. Yesterday's race for me was the most gratifying win in all the horses I've owned and all the races I've been. It was the most gratifying. And I said it a little while ago. You know, everybody was ready to give the trophy to Regal Glory, who's amazing. And I have tremendous respect for Chad. Chad does an amazing job. But I've owned racehorses for 20 years, but I've been betting on them for 50 years. And when you give the trophy to the supposed winner before the race, it rarely works out, especially up here in Saratoga. Every day we see two or three long shots win. So I just felt for this horse here in Saratoga, everybody thinking he can't get a mile. Bill knew he could get a mile. Louis knew he can get a mile. I knew he could get a mile. He won a mile up here. There was so many factors that for me last night I was thinking this is probably the most gratifying win we've ever had.
We talked about it. You and Steve were talking, and I was overhearing after the race yesterday, and you said, and I think, and just looking at the records and whatnot, the top of the turf male division, you're right there.
Steve and I were talking about it. I don't follow that stuff. Like, I'm all about the race. But I think when you take a look at it, he's won the Jiper and he's won the four-star Dave. So if you're talking about it, and I don't follow it that close, the best turf male of the year, he's in the conversation,
yes,
I guess.
Yes.
He's in the conversation.
Well, and I brought up Santin, who now has got two grade one wins,
right,
with the Million and with the Turf Classic. So, you know, as we arc to Keeneland, and I suppose that's a good segue into how you plan going forward, because there are several choices.
There are options.
And you know, this is the same situation you were dealing with last year.
Right.
Winning the Jiper, a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. But now, winning this race,
yeah,
with the Breeders' Cup win and you're in for miles. So you've got the choice this,
right,
time around,
yeah,
as opposed to last year at Del Mar.
So at Del Mar, I watched every sprint race on the grass that they ran before the Breeders' Cup. And no horse came from back to win a race. You had to be first, second, or third. So I think I looked at like 40 races. So I discounted the sprint altogether. And to be fair, he run better in the Breeders' Cup than you think looking at the form. Junior got him inside, and he had to check him, and it was a little bit of a roughly run race, and he came flying at the end. I think he should have been second or third that day. Keeneland is 5.5. I think it's a little short.
Sure.
We'll have to see how those sprint races run this fall, and then we'll make a determination. But if we had to make a decision today, I think that we'd lean towards the mile. And Bill and I talked about it last night. There are some other options before that if we want to run them. Kentucky Downs has the mile on September 3rd, the sprint a week later. My opinion, thinking about it this morning, is I'd rather run them in the Coolmore Mile at Keeneland on October 8th on the course that they're going to run the mile Breeders' Cup race.
Exactly.
It's 4 weeks apart. It gives them more time from yesterday, although yesterday, you know, we only ran 3/16 of a mile.
That's so, European style. You're right.
And if Bill said to me, I'm going to train him up to the Breeders' Cup, that's fine, too. That's fine, too. People say, well, it's a $1 million race. You got to go. Listen, if we win the million, we're just going to go buy horses with it. So I'm happy to wait.
That's funny.
I'm happy to wait.
That's a funny line, because whenever anybody says that, I'm always reminded of Harry Alleo.
Right.
From San Francisco with Lost in the Fog. And on TV, at some point, somebody said to him, Mr. Alleo, you've had multi-million-dollar offers for this horse. Have you considered selling him? Alleo, who had a fortune in real estate in San Francisco, said, what would I do with the money they paid me for Lost in the Fog, but go out and try to find another Lost in the Fog? So why would I sell this horse?
Last year, after High Oak won the special, Boyd Browning at Basic, and I love him, he's an amazing guy, said to me, let's put him in the auction, we'll do a special thing, he'll bring a big number. I said, you want to do that only because, you know, I'm going to take the money and I'm going to send it back to Basic Tipton. So we'll do what's best for the horse. If he tells us he wants to run, we'll run him probably in the Coolmore Turf Mile at Keeneland. But all options are always on the table. And if Bill says, let's just train him up to Keeneland. The one concern I have about the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland is in the fall, that turf course.
It's a very quirky course.
Could be very soft. He likes it a little firmer.
Well, and you tried this 2 years ago.
Yep.
But he's a different horse at six than he was at four.
Better today than ever in his life. And you saw him in the paddock yesterday?
Yeah,
he won the paddock contest.
Yeah,
he won the paddock contest.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, you talk about buying horses. Any two-year-olds to look at it? The remainder of the meet?
We have two very nice horses, probably not till October.
Okay.
Last year up here, I bought an Arrogate. We had 10 works in them. And Bill said to me a couple months ago, I don't want to sprint this horse at Saratoga. He's a two-turn dirt horse. I'm going to give him 60 days off. He's going to come back in training, and we'll look to run him in the fall. He could run at Aqueduct. I'd like to run him at Keeneland, maybe. So,
yeah.
He's big, beautiful Arrogate, and I have a beautiful Ghost Zapper, and I think Bill's assistant, Leanna, described him great. I said to her last week, he's out of Belmont with her, what do you think about his name is Shiloh Ridge? She said, Lee, he's like the 10th grader that all the kids pick on, but as a 12th grader, he beats the heck out of all of them. This horse is really growing up in front of me. He's going to be really, really good. So I'm glad to have a couple 2-year-olds to run in the fall. It's great. And I love fall racing. You know, it's beautiful, especially if they're ready to run at that Keeneland meet. Or, listen, Aqueduct is a great surface to run on. I have no problem being there either.
On this topic, expand or just riff a little bit, Lee, on how your philosophy has changed over the years in terms of the ownership, in terms of horse development, in terms of yearling buy versus yeah. 2-year-old and training buy versus the opportunity to retain a mare or two. And of course, some of this, I mean, you had Mr. Sidney who went to France,
right,
and stood for the
Alec Head.
For Alec Head, yep. The late Alec Head. And by the way, I meant, you know, I wanted to reach out to you at that time,
right,
to get you on the show, maybe tomorrow on the radio. You talk about Alec,
sure,
for a little bit. But how has it changed? Because you're going to get an opportunity to have shares, to have,
yeah,
you know, 10 covers with this horse.
In terms of breeding with him, I really haven't wrapped my head around it yet. I'm so into the racing.
Sure.
I'm so into watching him train. I love the day before the race, the day of the race, the night of the race. If all things work out, like last night was epic. Yeah. I think Jeffrey Einstein and his friends came in at 3 o'clock this morning, went up to the roof, drank more tequila and smoked cigars till 5 o'clock this morning. And
that's right. Usually, normally he would be with you.
I wasn't going to wake him up. So he was getting home when I was getting up. So we'll figure out the breeding and how we're going to do that in the future. He'll have an opportunity for sure. Where, when, how, those things will happen. Right now, we just want to really enjoy what happened yesterday afternoon. It's such a special day, and to be able to do that and do it in Saratoga, and it's just amazing.
Talk about the acquisition mode that you've and the evolution for you.
So, like a lot of guys, when I came in, I thought the more you spend, the faster the horse is. Doesn't work that way.
No.
There are million-dollar horses that sometimes need maiden 20s. Mike Frances and I picked out High Oak ourselves, and then I had Kenny McPeak and Pat Hoppe look at him, and they put their stamp of approval, and he cost $75,000. Casa Creek cost $105,000. So in terms of what we're buying horses for, I'm a lot more conservative, and I will tell you, I love having Mike Frances as my partner. He's very knowledgeable.
Sure.
He's been involved in the game forever. He's got an amazing family. We've all become very close. His wife is Mother Teresa. They have 3 unbelievable children. They love hanging with their Uncle Lee at the track. So I hope in the future when we buy, and we only buy 1 or 2 a year, that Mike and I will continue to be partners for a long, long, long time. And last night, 10 of us at Salivo having dinner, Mike's family, Jeffrey, his friends, me, it was glorious night. So I'm not into the partnerships and I'm not into big groups. One partner is enough. I say in business, a horse by committee is a camel. And I'm thrilled to have Mike with me, who has a great eye for horses and pedigree and understands the ups and downs of the game. So I think in terms of buying horses, 1 or 2 a year with Mike, and we're off to the races.
You've bought a little bit of everything, right? You've bought yearlings and had got them started. You've bought 2-year-olds that were, you know, kept right on with.
Yeah, I've bought Kentucky breds, New York breds, Phillies, Colts. More and more now we're thinking stick to Kentucky, and I like to buy the boys.
This is a philosophy.
I own 2 very nice mares.
Yeah.
I own a beautiful mare. She's down at Darby Dan. She's got a beautiful looking at Lucky Colt. She's in full to Country House.
It was
a perfect match. Bill Mott.
Did you do this with Bill? Did you do a full share?
No, I didn't, but it's neither here nor there. But I was thrilled to be able to do that. She was a great match for him. I have a very nice mare up here at McMahon. She threw a very nice 2-year-old that ran up here the opening Sunday, ran 3rd, Pete and Billy. Unfortunately, he came out of a work a little gimpy, and he's going to get a couple months off. And a couple mares is enough. You know, you got too many, and the bills are going crazy, and breeding is not really my thing. Racing's my thing. But I love the idea of having a couple mares every year. You got a couple two-year-olds, if things work out, that you can get to the races and not have to go to the auction. And the one mare is a McLean's Music, and she's with Becky. She's with Becky Thomas. Now she's down at Darby Dam, but she's got a Freud bull. Freud yearling.
You like Freud. You've always been a Freud fan.
Got a Freud yearling that's a big, beautiful horse. Hopefully it'll work out, and we'll run him up here next year.
There you go.
Sounds
good. A couple mares are enough.
Lee, happy to have you on after
thanks
the big
for having me,
Jeff. That was
so much fun.
Great day.
Yesterday.
So much fun.
Again, always...
Steve-O, thank you. Thanks for all the support.
Always fun to root for
you. The most generous individual. What he's done for any number of racetrack charities and for individuals who have had service.
Happy to help.
You couldn't believe it. Everybody's deserving of success in the game that puts their own, puts up their geld. A little extra deserving when it comes
Steve.
To Lee Einsider. No, let's take a break. We've got Rasai Harper waiting in the wings. If you're a Twitter user, you're following Real Players of the Backstretch. We're going to talk about the concept. Joe Bianca from TDN afterward. Second half of the show, basically. New media and getting the game out into the public for their consumption and doing it in a way that intrigues, interests, educates, and... makes them profitable as well. Rasai Harper next.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
The Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTV.com.
I'm Seth Merrill, and as serious horse players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers, no one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTV. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a serious horse player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTV.
Winning starts here.
Well, I told my dad when I was young I was going to get in the Hall of Fame when I was like 12. But did I believe it? Probably not. No,
you believed it because it's a passion. It's like me, man.
It's a passion. I mean, I always strive to do it, but, it amazes me how hard it is to get into it.
And now I'm an outrider. Yep, I'm a school teacher. I've been a school teacher for 26 years in Scotia. I teach 7th and 8th grade English, and then I've always done this in the summers. I galloped for Todd Pletcher for about 7 years, almost 8 years, and Linda Race before that. And I used to ride before school, change in the tack room, go to school, and then when summer came around, I did it full time. And then I got an opportunity to do this and use my, gives my horses summer employment as well. So then I started doing this as well. So I get to talk about it in the classroom too, so it's kind of fun.
So now I'm 18.
You're 18 years old?
So 18 riding on the racetrack like this is amazing to me.
Wow.
You know, knowing how to gallop horse, knowing how to breathe, knowing how to switch leads, everything take time, but once you get to do it, it's going to make you happy in the long run.
We're back on Loose on the Lead on an absolutely delightful Sunday morning, cool, crisp. It's why you come to Saratoga, and somebody that's been bringing not just Saratoga, but Aqueduct and Belmont and anything racing related, and I'm sure it'll expand out to other venues soon enough, Rasai Harper, the Real Players Inside the Backstretch. I noticed it turning up on Twitter about...
Oh, man.
How long ago? 8 months?
Eight months. Probably less than that.
7 months? Six months? Yeah. All of a sudden, I saw this. I said, oh, it's a little video. I start seeing people that are, they're grooms, they're farriers, they're trainers, they're any walk of life that is involved in this great game, in making the show go on. And Rasai has found them and is just simply kind of asking them for their stories. And this is a home run. Like, you, to me, you cannot believe what this is, because it was homegrown. It was organic. It wasn't some contrived marketing gimmick. And I want to know how it happened, how it came about, your background, the whole story.
You know, my background, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. And I moved to Saratoga about 10 years ago. I'm a master barber locally here. And it all formed inside a barbershop. So when I got here, I got connected with Maurice. So Maurice is another barber, and we connected in the barbershop. We was work buddies that became best friends. And, you know, he grew up in the horse racing background. So his roots is like growing up on Belmont from a little baby hopping the fence. And he got memories going back at 6 years old. And he said, you know what? No racetrack, you keep me out of here. Hop the fence. And he get in, right? And he got all these horse stories. And his family is from the Carolinas, the Illyries, and Camden, and Aiken. And they all come under the Eddie Sweats. And
nice.
The Bulkharts as grooms. And, you know, and he tell me all these stories. So me driving him home every day, I'm hearing these stories. And now we working in the barbershop on Henry Street. So guess what? The trainers is coming in. The grooms is coming in.
Yeah.
You know, Chad Brown is a client. And Todd Pletcher came in. LeParoux, Kendrick. And so I'm in Saratoga. I'm not familiar with racing, but all I see is racing. And around this time of year is exciting. On the TV, everything horse racing. And so one day I was cutting Javier Castellano hair. He was a regular of mine. And I asked him, I said, Javi, is you this famous in Venezuela? And he said, yeah, but when I go, I got to go with the security, because it's dangerous. So the president will fly him in and he might get ransomed off, right? And I'm like, wow.
Seth has that problem in Saratoga.
And you know, right then, I look on the winner's circle later on that day, you see Javi in the winner's circle, and you see the wave like you normally see when they win. And I turned around and asked everybody, man, they don't interview these guys? And from that moment forward, it sparked the interest for me to say, you know what, we get all the guys come in the shop. Let's do a podcast in the barbershop. It'd be a cool barbershop. It'd be a cool podcast if we get trainers and people from the town and handicappers. You get a chance to add Todd or Chad a question in real time. And so I was on a mission. It's like 7 years ago. I'm on a mission now. So you know what? I got to find somebody to film it. So I'm looking around for videographers, film guys. I'm like, I got a documentary, a movie on my hand. At least something.
Yeah.
Because we got the relationships, right? So now, couldn't find nobody. Everybody wanted to charge me $1,200 an episode. So I'm like, maybe we partner. You don't see the value in this? Nobody wanted to partner. Nobody seen value in nothing.
Unbelievable.
And I could not understand everybody with all these cameras that make content that nobody sees. And here I'm coming up with a great idea. I would think, you know what, let me team up with this guy, he got a great idea. Yeah. Everybody said it was a great idea, and you know what I mean? But nobody wanted to loosen their time for free and kind of create something. So, you know, fast forward, COVID hit, the shop folded, and I spent all my savings on this camera. I never filmed before, never shot, and never edited, nothing. And you know, I'm watching all these YouTube videos, Peter McKinnon and all these guys on YouTube about cameras, and I'm studying for about a good year before I brought the camera, to the point where all algorithms are sending me cameras on my phone, you know what I mean? So it's a dilemma now, like what to buy. I go to B&H in Manhattan, I'm asking questions. I started with a Canon, and then they sent all this stuff, and I sent it back. I go down there, I said, ah, man. So the guy in the
So I met a guy in the camera store. He said, listen, I'm going to give you two advice. A Canon is like automatic, and a Sony is like manual. And that's what I was left with. I said, you know what? I made a gut choice, went with the Sony, and, you know, and then we made, so then got the camera. So me and Maurice sat down. I said, you know what? We got to do a Facebook group. We're going to start with a Facebook group because I feel like...
That was smart.
Instead of going to YouTube or doing a page, let's go with a group and go with the interaction. Let's try to build a community of interactions. And we made the first post in 2020, a story about Barbaro. Maurice wrote up a story about Barbaro as the initial post. Then we went dormant. It was flat. We had no action. So because he went, he had nothing else to write, right? Because he went frozen for a minute. Fast forward 7 months later, our very first interview in the group was Chad Brown. We seen Chad Brown, and he gave us a tour around the barn, and that was the first interview, and it was history. Then the traction automatically started happening. You know, it was organic. Exactly. I couldn't believe,
exactly,
like,
right.
We knew it was special,
yeah.
But the way people found this content was even more special that I couldn't even believe, you know what I mean? Because I do a lot of stuff content-wise, and I do free haircuts for the homies and veterans every month, yeah, every first That's Sunday great. Of the month. So we do That's a lot great. Of stuff to help people, and it don't get no traction. And you got to post, ask people to repost, share. The real players, I never asked not one person to reshare this content. They found it,
yep.
And now the group got 5,500 followers in the group on Facebook, right? So then you know what? We said, I'm going to start a page. So we started a page in December. And the Facebook page got over 13,000 subscribers. So our Facebook community is now touching almost 20,000 in the space of like not even a year. Then the Twitter is just like, and for me, Twitter never worked. You know what I mean? Like Twitter's the hardest platform to get going, right? And for some reason, the Twitter is just buzzing, but it's buzzing with industry people, regular people. Like everybody is just... You know?
Well, and the reason is because the videos are sharp, they're tight, they're quick. You get a feel whether you let sometimes you let people kind of roll and let them just let them meander in their conversation. Other times it's tighter, but it's just providing this glimpse into life at the racetrack that is totally authentic. There's nothing canned about it. And I mean, in terms of your natural interaction, that's Ice Cube right out of barbershop, yeah. Eddie
Eddie Murphy, yeah.
Right? Those scenes in any barbershop, yeah. That interaction, and also the beauty salon, that great crackling, vibrant conversation, and you're uniquely equipped for that.
And you know, right, to make it even more special, that I couldn't understand that nobody covered people like that. When I look at racing, you see mostly handicappers,
yeah.
And you see horses going around, but you don't talk to people. Me being around horsemen as much as I've been around, like in a barbershop, you catch the conversations off the record. And I always thought, like, it ain't no better content than that. These guys is funny. These guys tell a great story. And then you go to the backstretch and get even better. Because you got people talking about it's not money, it's not fame, it's not nothing. It's pure passion. And you know it's nothing. That's not a fixed story.
No.
And these guys tell you the amazing. Any horse you could think about, who you think got the stories? It's the people that take care of the horses.
And we showed coming out of the break some clips there, and I think one of the nice things you do, you cover the gamut. We saw Marquesi, we saw an outrider, we saw an exercise rider, and that's a lot what you do. You have the Chad Browns and the Marquesis, but you have the people on the backstretch, and those are the people who have the great stories, but nobody ever sees. And so, and I'll also ask you, because I read an article doing research last night, and somebody... I want to say they called your method soft ambush.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how much is scheduled, but it seems like most of it is just you're kind of walking around the backstretch. Hey, this guy looks like he's going to be interesting. He may have an interesting story, and
nothing
you go grab it.
Nothing is scheduled. Everything is real time. And I'm going to tell you a story, right? We went to Kentucky for the Derby. We spent all the money to get down there with no tickets to get in the Derby.
Yep.
And the first day of the Oaks,
I met a guy in Kentucky. He gave me some inner circle tickets, and I ended up wiggling my way to be in the paddock, right? And I got back to the room later. I said, Mo, listen, we got to get up early to try and find some access, because this thing is like Fort Knox. We're not going to be able to get in, right? So we get up early, and we walk in, and we're talking to people. Everybody knew us in Kentucky. Real players, right? And so we walk in, and we seen a guy behind us walking. And I turned around, and we said, hey, gave him one of these flyers, real players. He said, I watch you. I said, yeah, what's your name? He said, I'm Brendan Walsh. I said, wow, right there, stock froze, interview.
Camera goes up.
Boom, interview happens. After the interview, we asked Brendan. We say, Brendan, listen, we ain't got no tickets to get in there. The guy went in his car.
He's the greatest.
And listen, shot us two tickets.
He's the greatest.
Food package. And he said, and next you know, I'm in the Derby. Just like that. Real time. I didn't even know who Brendan Walsh was.
Oh, he's the greatest.
And he knew who we was, but the guy is a heart of gold and really gave us a great interview. And you can't make this stuff up. And that's real racetrackers is what you get. Not one person not spoke to me. I don't care the status, bottom to top. So we went out to cover this game top to bottom. We feel like, you know what? Nobody's covering this game top to bottom. We believe every single body is important in this life. It's hard work, and if you do this job, we want to talk to you.
100% correct.
We're running late, Rossi, but we have to wrap it up. But we did want to introduce people, and we put up the Twitter handle, but you're on other social media platforms as well. And if you haven't seen it yet, check it out, because, again, it gives you a nice insight to the game, the front side and the back side. Real players inside the back stretch.
Well, let's run them down. On Instagram, it's Inside the Back Stretch on Instagram. On Twitter, Real Back Stretch. And on Facebook, The Real Players Inside the Back Stretch, which is the full title of the brand. And Rasai Harper, I congratulate you and Maurice. This is inspiring. And whatever we can do to help spread it out, don't hesitate to ask.
Thank you very
much. We'll
get you
on the radio this week, all right?
And it was a pleasure meeting you guys.
Thank you.
And all love, man.
She's behind everything, I understand.
Oh, yes,
right?
Yes. That's the
my barber.
Yep, that's your barber. Hey, look, that's how it works. Charlie the Close. There it is.
What's the over-under? 3.5 minutes to clean him up?
Him? Yeah. Maybe
5. Ah! Where do you work?
Hair Mechanics on room 15, Saratoga.
There you go. Hair Mechanics. And ask for?
Charlie.
At Hair Mechanics in Saratoga.
With the French accent.
With the French
accent.
Easy
to pick out. All right, we'll do a break.
This.
When we come back, Joe Bianca will join us from TDN.
Oh,
stay tuned.
It only takes one upset to make history, and now you can be part of Saratoga's long tradition at the Dark Horse Mercantile. The Dark Horse Mercantile offers a carefully curated selection of clothing, gifts, and home decor, from one-of-a-kind vintage racing memorabilia to select brands like Barber and Under Armour, as well as exclusive Dark Horse branded merchandise. So celebrate the Dark Horse in all of us at the Dark Horse Mercantile, downtown Saratoga, where the smart bet is always the Dark Horse.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead. As promised before the break, joined now by Joe Bianca, Thoroughbred Daily News, and more. And Steve said, you're his guy. And I remember over on the barbecue side of things.
Slate Barbecue, my humble roots over
slinging pulled pork over on the other side. There were worse summer jobs. There were better summer jobs, but there were worse summer jobs.
Being at the
Yeah. Let me tell you, there was no better summer job to lead to where you are now.
It's true. It's true.
Right?
Prepared me for this moment right here.
Exactly.
with the crossroads of the racetrack being the little porch on the back
there.
That's
right. I should have been on a Versailles show if you had that back in the day.
Absolutely. It would have been it would have fit. I mean, because what we wanted to do, and I wanted to get Chuck and Barry Spears on too today, but Barry had to fly back. I wanted this sort of second half of the show to be a new media conversation, and we can use that segue to talk about what you've done, because in addition to your writing and editing work at TDN, the videography, the videos, whether it's starts out with the writer's room, which is industry topics and so forth, plus a little handicapping. But then you've added recently this Better Things, which I guess is a riff on Stranger Things.
It's a riff on, we had to have a better pun in there somewhere, so we said that's what we came up with.
I thought it had a Better Things tie-in. No. But Joe is trying, and Rasai is trying, and Chuck Simon and Barry Spears are trying to reach an audience that is not the conventional old school, and that's not an aspersion on anybody that of any age, but you're trying to engage people in a different way with information that educates and that informs, that motivates, as horse players, as potential owners, as whatever capacity, which is also the same approach that I've got on the radio. Yeah. My idea is, and Seth and I with this show for no one knows how long, we'll have to cut us in half and count the rings.
That was gray hair when you first started, I thought.
I did, actually, but I see a couple poking through. But the idea of getting people to look into the game, to understand the game, with information that is easy to digest. And that's the commonality.
Yeah. Well, and also it's also about getting to know people, because you know this better than anybody, how many personalities there are in racing. You got to be a little bit of a nutcase to be a racing fan or a horse player or handicapper. And so I just think everybody, and people have so many different stories, and people come at it from so many different angles. So that's what I'm kind of trying to do with Better Things. Like, we have the handicapping segment, we talk about racing and playing the horses a lot, but it's also about getting to know people who have been successful betting horses or even betting sports, because everybody takes a different path and we all end up at the same place. And I'm fascinated by that. I'm fascinated by finding how everybody got to this point, because it's just so rife with stories, and different backgrounds, and it's a beautiful thing. But yeah, also, I think, similar to Rasai, I think authenticity is a big thing too. And I think that's part of the reason your show's been successful, and that's part of the reason I think the writer's room has been successful, because we don't sugarcoat things. We try to speak very plainly about everything in racing, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between. So I think that's a big thing too, because I think there's been a lot of, like I said, sugarcoating in racing media historically, and we try to stay away from that.
I pulled up a little video from the writer's room. No audio, just they can play it while we're talking here. But for folks who haven't seen it yet, it's a great, there's a video podcast. You can also pull it up on audio, listen to your car or whatever. But it's at TDN. How often, when does this launch every week? It's weekly, right?
Yeah, Writer's Room comes out Wednesday night. We usually record Tuesday and Wednesday. They come out Wednesday night. And Better Things, we have a sponsorship with the Breeders' Cup right now, where I'm handicapping all of the winning you're in nationally televised races. So that's when those come out. I think the next one is September 3rd. But yeah, Writer's Room is every single week. Shout out to Bill Finley and John Green, my co-hosts. We have a great production team as well. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot like hanging out with you guys. It's really just like sitting around, BSing with your friends, more than a job specifically.
No, I'll recommend it. It is fun. I do the audio and listen in the car when I drive back and forth. Same thing I do with the Big Show.
There you go. Who wins? You had to pick one.
That's right.
You say Steve. He's your co-host. We all know.
He listens to his segment.
That's what I do. I always joke that I fast forward through Bill and John's parts when I watch the show.
Who doesn't? I can't listen.
Oh, I can't listen. I cannot. Listen or watch
it drives
anymore.
Me.
You can't listen to yourself?
Very hard.
Really?
Very, very hard. It's a weird thing. You know what's funny? And this goes even back to when I broadcast sports. my voice sounds a certain way to me.
Yeah.
And it sounds a certain way when I hear it or watch, you know, watch a replay. To me, it must not sound that way to other people. Everyone says, oh, I love you. You've got such a broadcasting sounding voice. And it just doesn't hit my ear the way it must hit other people. It's very strange to me.
No, I kind of have the same experience. Like when I listen to myself, like I don't particularly like my on-air voice, but people tell me the same thing. They're like, you got a great broadcasting voice. I'm like, okay, I'll go with it. But yeah, you do for sure.
It's weird. And even when I wasn't on the radio, every so often, like you'd be in a dining setting, and somebody would say, I get a couple of these kinds of things. Are you on radio? Are you on TV? And it's like, no. And at the time, I would think, but I wanted to be my whole life.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of a strange thing. Anyway, yeah. One of the things that has really has distinguished you in at a young age. Because how old now?
35.
I was going to say 35.
Yep.
36. God, I've known you since you were...
Like half my life. Like since I was 18.
Jesus, that's scary.
Yeah.
We met all of us through Derby Trail,
yep.
Through my website, which actually we all met. Were you on the ESPN board
yeah.
too? The ESPN had a message board. And I started to get Derby Trail going. And when Barbaro was stricken... There were all these crazy trolls that showed up at the ESPN. I mean, what would motivate somebody to come to a horse racing community and like, you know, be mean and angry? Of course, we've got a brush fire now, a conflagration.
Yes.
But at the time, we were like, "Hey, this is awful."
Yeah.
And I was getting ready to launch Derby Trail, so I threw the switch on Derby Trail, and all the ESPN message board people came to, and we had basically our own private
mm-hmm.
message board, about 250 of us.
Yeah.
And that also gave way to the stable, and everything else. But that's where we met, and you were downstate in Brooklyn. You were coming up here, and you and your dad. And that's how we met.
The first time we met was the day after my senior prom. Like, it was the Belmont was the next day,
oh.
And we hadn't slept at all the night before. We came straight to the track in the morning. I made it for like Tuesday at Fleet Alex Belmont. I made it for like two races, and then I had it over. Watched the rest on TV.
Well, that wasn't the one. A lot of you know Dr. John Cheros and Patty, and from the Pond Street Stable days.
Yes.
Was that the same?
No, that was
the next year.
That was another night I was out partying until like 5 a.m. Then we came and had the open bar in the morning. Open bar is always
that
good.
That was not good for you. That was Southern Comfort. That was your first Southern Comfort and Coke experience.
I was like, yeah. So it started like a year of drinking nothing but Southern Comfort. But I've never touched it since.
anyway, so but, Joe's opinion, I mean, not just his racing opinion, which has always been good. You've always had a good opinion on you know, in terms of betting. But you've also got very acute feelings toward the industry issues of the day.
Yes.
And you're very, you know, you're very clear-eyed about it. You're sort of an heir in some ways locally to Rick Violette, because Rick Violette was famous as being somebody who you could have a heated discussion with. You could be on the opposite end of the Lasix and non-Lasix, for instance. And Rick would never take it personal. If you had this confrontation and this argument the next day or later that day, they were just the opinions. And you've got that about you, which is very valuable, that there's no animosity, and you understand that people involved in the game have the philosophies that they have from their experience and their vantage point. And it's one of the difficulties that has held the game back in a lot of ways, because a lot of us feel we have the best interest of the game at heart, and we all do.
Yeah.
And you've been very good at you know, trying to reach the people that might not agree with you.
Well, I think we have to talk about things in this industry. We have to have those conversations, and some of them are uncomfortable. Some of them might piss certain people off. certain advertisers perhaps, but like it's the stuff that we brushed under the rug for a long time in racing, because I think it's a natural instinct, I think, to want to protect racing, you know, especially when it's being attacked from outside sources, whether it's PETA or the media or whatever. But I don't think that we should go so far in the other direction and then just completely ignore the stuff that's festering that brings that kind of negative attention. So, I mean, that's always my philosophy, is like we want to have those hard conversations on the show. And if you get mad and you want to get in the comments and yell at us, that's fine. Like we're not gonna please everybody all the time. But you know, I think people are watching because they're thinking like, well, people. I mean, you do it too, but people are finally talking about this stuff at large, I think. So that's, yeah.
Did you come to town to cover something in particular, or just in
no, the fandom? No, just here chilling. Yeah, no. Usually I come to. Well, we did the 100th episode of the Writers' Room here last year. We actually have 150 coming up this Wednesday.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot of episodes, a lot of time with those guys. But no, it's been great. But this weekend I'm just hanging out. Yeah.
So how's it been going?
It's been great. Yesterday was, I mean, the weather is just perfect, man. And yeah, I love the new paddock bar.
Yeah, yeah.
With the overhang. Oh,
really?
It's beautiful.
It was going to ruin Saratoga, you know? It was going to destroy the atmosphere. How can they do this?
That's what I mean. There's so many people in racing
ridiculous.
Who have like those really intense feelings about stuff that really does not matter that much. And it's great. It's a beautiful place to go hang out.
Absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. I came out.
Yeah.
Bonaventure Stable had a event there 2 weeks ago and invited me up to handicap, and so I spent time there and ate lunch and whatnot. It's a nice venue.
Yeah.
Always be closing.
Off on the deck too, kind of overlooking the paddock.
It's not bad.
So it's nice on the inside too, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, we made a little money yesterday too at the late pick four, so we'll try to
good job.
We'll try to roll that into today's action. But yeah,
you got an opinion or two for today?
I haven't looked yet. I'm going to go back right after this and handicap the card. Very nice. You can catch me at one of the picnic tables, probably. Yep.
What did you think of Casa Creed yesterday?
Oh, man. As Mike Francesa would say, what a horse. What a horse. 6 furlongs, a mile, doesn't matter. Beautiful horse. Yeah, no, I mean, he looked great. He's like kind of one of those overachievers that I really like, too. I like Jimmy Creed as a sneaky turf sire, too. So, yeah, I liked him a couple of years ago when he ran third in the 4-star, Dave. But yesterday, 4-1, it was okay price.
Yeah, no, I thought the price was really good.
Yeah, I was surprised he was like, I think it was a bigger price than the other Chad, which I didn't understand.
Yeah, no, that was
7-2 for Chad. I thought he was up against it a little bit. I mean, Lee said this week, as we said earlier, he said he's going to sit comfortable, make the one run, and I didn't think necessarily we were going to get a kind of a pace chase, and he didn't need it.
He didn't even need it.
No. Yeah. I just love horses like that, too, like come with their run no matter what. You know, they don't necessarily need a setup or everything to fall into their hands. Like, they just come with their run. He's one of those horses.
As we sit right now, approaching the end of August, so we've got September, October, figure what, 10 weeks. What's your opinion? We had this Breeders' Cup Classic, and I'm sure you discussed this on the show, the Breeders' Cup Classic future wager, which seemed like it was a bit of a bust. It just didn't have much viable value options. I mean, the reason you want to bet a future wager is you want to get a price you're not going to get on the day of the race.
Yeah.
And it just didn't seem like that materialized. Now, that said, what's your thoughts on where they stand right now? We got Flightline coming up in the Pack Classic. We just saw Life is Good. How do you stack this all up?
I mean, first thing I would say is I think we're very blessed right now to have a lot of really, really nice horses in training.
In various divisions.
Yes, yeah. And I remember, like, I feel like not that long ago, maybe during the 2010s, there wasn't quite as much talent. We had the odd one pop up like American Pharoah, but overall, I think the level of talent right now is the best it's been since, like, maybe the mid-2000s when we had, like, Ghost Sapper and St. Liam and all those horses running.
Mm-hmm.
So that's first of all. Secondly, I think the Classic is interesting because I don't think Life is Good wants to go a step beyond 9 furlongs. And, you know, Flightline obviously is a superstar, but he's got to go a mile and a quarter, too, so we'll see what happens. I'm hoping we get more than, like, 3 horses to show up against them in the Pacific Classic, but Who knows? Because that's not a thing anymore. We don't get big fields and great ones these days, no matter how much money you're giving away. But I do think it's ripe for an upset if Flightline shows those same kind of maybe a little bit weakness going beyond 9 furlongs. So like, if I were going to do the future wager, like I saw a horse, and he's who I picked on better things, and unfortunately he scratched, was American Revolution. He's 32-1 in the Classic, and a horse that I'm confident wants to go a mile and a quarter.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there is a lot of speed, which who knows now, but that's what it looks like at the moment, I think that he could totally come pick up the pieces. So I think it's a great Classic division, but it's nice that there's like a little bit of vulnerability in the top horses, you know, because then I think it makes it more interesting down the stretch.
And of course, the one thing that is tricky on that read, we also, I mean, at least I felt that way too, going into with Nick Scow.
Yes.
Where you thought, well, you know, it's almost like you want some vulnerability because you're not going to want to take the 4-5 or the even money that he's going to be. And then, of course, he just went out and throttled the thing.
And at 3-1 in the Classic, like I was dead set against him and then should have changed my opinion because I thought 3-1 was, relatively speaking, an overlay on him. But yeah.
As it turns out. Yeah. So, no, I completely agree that we have got, other than maybe Philly and Mare Sprinters, which are still, we still need a little help there, every division
loaded.
Is absolutely terrific. And
well, I mean, I don't know Breeders' Cup quality, but as you mentioned at Churchill yesterday,
that well, you got the two. You got those two. I mean, those two are division on themselves.
Yeah, that absolutely buzzed over.
Yeah,
in Wisconsin.
Exactly.
Joe, running late, but wanted to talk and tout again the writers' room a little bit, better things and whatnot. Thoroughbred Daily News. Appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks for coming on. Always good to hang with you guys.
And give the Twitter address, the Bianca. It's,
yeah, JBiancaTDN.
JBiancaTDN. I haven't seen the alter ego as much lately. The hidden, the shadow account.
The burner
account. No, but you had that before.
Yeah. That I had to clean it up. I had to button it up.
They're worried about that. Joe Bianca, everybody. So proud of Joe's work.
Thanks, man.
Thank you,
buddy.
Appreciate
you, buddy.
All right, we'll wrap it up for this edition of Loose on the Lead. We put another Sunday in the books. Great day to come over and enjoy the racing.
This may have been the best show ever.
Well, every show is the best show ever. That's what makes people want to watch the next week.
Well, I wouldn't count on next week.
I won't be here.
It is Alabama, though. It is Alabama.
So we'll wrap it up. Again, don't forget, Low Rollers contest over there, the New York Bread Sale tonight. So a lot still going on tomorrow night as well. At Tout also, the Harness Track, I think, has done a great job doing the nighttime Friday and Saturday and Sunday during the meet. So a Sunday over here and doubleheader over there is an option as well. Keep that in mind. But you can play along here with us on the network all day today as well. We will be back in the morning Wednesday, 9 a.m. for the Handicapper Support, 10 a.m. for Racing Across America. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.